From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of February, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll talk with a farmer who plans to put soybeans in the ground to plant soybean plots next week on February the 23rd. Can you imagine? We'll hear why a bit later in this half hour, and we'll also discuss some of the cash grain market too, that with Matt Bennett at Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, and the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Look us up online, listen to us anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 17th day of February. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good, happy Friday, Todd.
Yeah, finally the end of the week. However, happy is a relative term because it's been two rough days in Chicago for the grains and the oil seeds. What happened today?
Well, you know, let's take it from a standpoint of the technicals first. You know, we did get to some pretty significant multi-week, if not multi-month highs this week, and challenged some big numbers in terms of moving averages and trend lines, and we just simply failed. And I think that's where you are in this kind of a market environment where you have fresh supplies coming on the market in the form of USDA reports and ag forums next week. You've got a three-day holiday that's kind of squeezing you in your temperament, I think, if you're a fund that's been in the market for a while. Then you probably have the South American weather, which we've been trading and trading and trading. And nothing wrong with doing that. It's just, do you have enough information right now to justify, if the charts don't supply you reason to go higher, you better have some fundamentals underneath you like weather. And I think in the soybeans, we didn't get that on Friday. I think on Thursday, we started this turn to the downside thanks to the corn and revisiting the issue with Mexico's trade and the United States corn, because the Mexican ag minister is heading down to South America to go shopping for corn. And he made a big point of that, in my opinion. So I think you had a variety of reasons that confirmed a sell signal on the oscillators today on the close, Todd, and puts us kind of limping going into the three-day week. And it's not that there's not features out there that can't bring us back around. It's just the market, I think, was in more of a safe haven environment in the ag sector and the grain sector as we closed up this week.
Yesterday, you were on Commodity Week along with Matt Bennett, who we'll talk with in a bit. And that show will air on some of these radio stations, certainly the home radio station, at 36 after the hour. Others tomorrow, also online already at willag.org. We talked a lot about this particular prospect and the idea that producers might need to take some advantage of what they're looking at in Chicago at this point. Has that changed at all today?
Well, I think in the form it has. I put out a midday audio commentary to clients and subscribers, and I worded it this way. I said, I still feel as though we did not make new lows in the meal when we did in the beans. As far as daily lows, we actually made, in all the commodities except for beans, we made new weekly highs earlier this week. And so the beans, I think, are the major problem, technically speaking, whereas meal is not. And that's a real good potential sign that this market can come back around. We've got winter wheat weather that was much drier on the last two model runs, and I think that will be a feature next week. I also think that the Argentine weather is wet enough to keep the bull somewhat supported, and I think you throw on top of that European wheat weather and the fact that we're going to have a terrific warm-up based upon the weekend models in all of Ukraine and a lot of southern Russia that's going to completely remove their snowpack when they still got lots of winter ahead of them. I'm not a seller of cash bushels here, Todd, and that's kind of what I talked about on the audio. Short-term puts in corn, short-term puts in beans, maybe some longer-term puts and short calls in the new crop beans for catch-up selling. That I would look at very significantly because of these technicals, but cash bushels after this kind of a break back down. I'm going to wait till I come back from the holiday and see what the winter wheat weather can do for me.
An inside week for the soybeans, a hook down, though, for corn, though we're still well above the trend going higher, right?
Yes, we are. And, you know, you've got the 200-day moving average in the March corn sitting around 367. You've got the 100 and 200-day moving averages in March beans right around the 1016, 1018 level. So we still have quite a bit of distance down in the beans before we do any significant damage. I think it goes back to, and I've had some conversations like this in the past couple weeks, especially as we've gotten this insurance price more nailed down now that we're in the halfway point of the month of February. If you haven't started hedging, I think there's some issues you need to be concerned about, and I think we need to discuss those issues and map out a plan for you in the medium term. And I think that when I went back and thought about the Commodity Week program, that was what I think all of us were trying to convey, is this is not a buy the dip type market yet. It could be, but we've got a lot of inflationary bullishness priced in already. It doesn't mean it can't continue, but it goes back to having to feed the bull. And so I'm very worried about right now, quite honestly, the crude oil market and the fact that we have record U.S. supplies up against record managed longs as far as net longs of futures and options. I don't like that scenario. It's almost the exact reverse of what we had last year when we were making sharply, you know, more new 10, 12-year lows and we had declining supplies. So I think the market, outside market, especially in crude oil, is getting a little off kilter here.
So just get yourself and think of the set and think of this as a normal growing season for the United States so far.
I think that's exactly right. And then I think after you can nail down the corn and bean acreage switch based upon next week's numbers and then again on March 30th, and more importantly, whether that hard red wheat drought continues to support us in the feed grains and keep prices globally elevated, I think this is the key. We have still big, big supplies of wheat, both domestically and globally, but that will mean less and less and less the more weather problems there are as we get into the spring. And I think that translates and transfers premium into the corn and maybe even into the beans some as well. That's where I think the re-ownership and the sell and defend model could work fairly well here.
Any other things we ought to discuss before I let you go for the afternoon?
I think the only other thing I would say is we still have seen a continuation of the bean-corn spread going back and forth. Beans at the end of the week, believe it or not, new crop beans actually gained on new crop corn. And so I think the trade is a little bit more concerned about buying some bean acres back. That was kind of a surprise to me given some of these private estimates that are being bantered around. So here again, that's something to watch.
Looking forward to having you here in the state on the 7th day of March and having you for Commodity Week here in about 20 minutes or so.
Always a pleasure with you, sir.
That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll be our panelist guest on Commodity Week, along with Matt Bennett and Aaron Curtis. You can hear that on WILLAG.org right now. Pick up your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook there as well, or dial during regular business hours, 800-898-1065. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. Senate has voted today to confirm Scott Pruitt to run the Environmental Protection Agency. Pruitt, who fought several major EPA rules as Oklahoma's attorney general, has faced sharp opposition from agency employees and Democrats who unsuccessfully tried to delay the vote until he discloses thousands of emails from his time as AG. Pruitt's expected to be sworn in as EPA administrator later this afternoon. Well, let's stay with the Trump administration and at least with policy. When a senator from Mexico threatened to retaliate against President Donald Trump by introducing legislation to block imports of U.S. corn, a few in the industry took him seriously, but reports that Mexico is planning a trip to Argentina and Brazil to explore buying yellow corn could make U.S. producers nervous. Mexico Agriculture Minister Jose Calzada, in an interview in Mexico City yesterday, said that he would lead a delegation to the two South American countries within the next 20 days and also look at quotas and changes to tariffs to facilitate more imports from those countries. The goal, he says, is to decrease Mexico's reliance on the United States for its agricultural products due to the uncertainty surrounding Trump's stance on trade policy, particularly NAFTA. Well, on that note, a Canadian embassy official on Thursday downplayed the idea that the North American Free Trade Agreement will devolve into two separate bilateral deals among the three NAFTA parties, but acknowledged that some issues are best handled on a bilateral basis, just as in the original pact. Earlier this week, the president said he also wants to make minor tweaks in the Canadian portion of the NAFTA agreement, but had bigger changes in mind for the Mexican portion of the pact. And even if Trump is successful in negotiating a new NAFTA, he still will have a difficult time winning approval of the revised pact because Democrats are unlikely to like NAFTA 2.0 any more than they like the current deal. It means a long haul for any new trade deal between the three nations, somewhere between 2 and 4 years out. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, an interview I did at the Soybean Summit yesterday in Peoria. Next week, right here in Champaign County, a farmer is going to put soybeans in the ground. Hey, have you thought about rolling that planter out of the shop yet? Maybe, just because it's been warm, but have you thought about planting anything? Maybe, but you're not going to go. However, there are a few folks that go and go really early. Sometimes just for experiments and sometimes not. One of those people is here with us today from Champaign County. Chris Ehler is with us. If you follow him anywhere, whether that be on the web, maybe on YouTube, you might have seen him rolling along in his planter really early, not planting corn, but planting soybeans. He's here today, and next week, Chris, you're going to put soybeans in the ground.
Wednesday, February 22nd is my target date this year. Last year's date was March 12th, and March 23rd was my ultra early planting dates. Went out with a 4.7, a 4.5, and a 4.4 on those planting dates, and had some really good success with them. So 2017, my goal was to be able to find a window in February, and it looks like Mother Nature is going to present that to us moving forward. So looking at the forecast, I'm playing the odds, and I'm going with Wednesday the 22nd for the first of our planting dates.
Okay, to be clear right now, Emerson Nafziger from the University of Illinois would say, heck no. He might even say something. Well, no, Emerson would not. He would say no, not this early. However, he will say go as soon as you're done planting corn. I know he'll say that because he said that in the past. This is very early. How good are these soybeans, and what's the downside, and have you had some real failures too?
Talking failures, I've yet to have one in 8 years of doing early planting trials, so that's why I want to continue to push this. I want to find that breaking point in the soybean plant, in the seed treatments, and we have had some success, and it's kind of a risk and reward. Soybeans are harvesters of sunlight. The earlier we can get those soybeans out of the ground and harvesting that light, you know, we know that our longest day of the year, June 21st, summer solstice, we want flowering to initiate the first week of June, and this all plays into it. And by planting early and planting a fuller season variety, we're seeing in our trials 8.5 bushel advantage by early planting in the last 4 years. That's real money.
That is real money. How much management does it take to do this?
You know, it takes a full load of seed treatment. We know that the pest disease pressures are going to be greater in those cooler, wetter environments. So again, coming with a fully loaded seed treatment is an absolute must. We're a big fan of inoculants. Getting that plant nodulated early, fixing nitrogen, and off to the races. The other thing that you got to factor in is you know you're going to have some temperature extremes. So planting depth is a big thing on the early planting trials. I'm 2 to 2.25 inches. I want that seed to stay in the ground upwards of 20 to 30 days. And it's a long time in the ground. So you want that seed treatment. You want that plant protected. And you're just playing the curve. You want it below the ground. So when the weather does turn and we get that cold snap, it's not going to be above ground. It's going to be just waiting to crack the soil hopefully by mid-late March.
You said risk reward. Are you risking very much at this point? Meaning, are you planting just, you know, a round or a plot, or are you planting whole fields?
So with February planting, I'm going to put an acre out because the probability of survival, pretty low. Now, as I get into mid and late March, my trials have shown that, yes, I can take those beans to yield. So it's going to be a little bit larger planting area, a minimum of 2 acres. So those portions can be entered into the Soybean Association Yield Contest.
Thanks so much. Good luck this year.
Thank you. I need a lot of it.
We spoke with Chris Ehler. He's from right here in Champaign County at yesterday's Illinois Soybean Summit that took place in Peoria. Now on the phone line with us to talk about the commodity markets and what's been happening in his area is Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Matt, thanks for being with us and for being on Commodity Week when we recorded yesterday, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be here.
So let's talk about the drop in the marketplace today. Was this something that we were thinking would happen 2 days in a row? Yesterday, not pretty. Today, again, the same thing.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, some of your technicians were sure hoping that we would end up actually settling back a little bit higher today after the drop off yesterday. Obviously, 2 days in a row isn't such a great thing. Whenever you look at you know, the things that I'm concerned with more so than cash right now, we're looking really very closely at your Dease corn and your no beans. Still got awfully attractive price levels, but we've absolutely dropped off from the $4 plus that we were looking at and the 10.30 plus. You know, but your average prices for the month are still 10.22 on beans and 3.97 for corn. So those are obviously very good prices as far as your February crop insurance averages go. And I think that good revenue guarantees are going to be had this year by the U.S. producer, which is definitely a good thing.
Come back to the old crop, especially for corn for me. Many producers have a lot of bushels that were raised last year, extra bushels. In fact, they're in storage. They haven't moved them yet. When do you think they should consider this?
You know, I think if it's in commercial stores getting charges for storage, it needs to be done now, if not before now. I mean, we've got to, look at the stuff in the bin. If a person needs some money, either one of those situations, I think that it's a good idea to go ahead and re-own some of those bushels, at least to get us through, your acreage situation. Because when it's all said and done, I think that there could be some strength in this corn market, maybe more so, relatively speaking, than what I see in the soybean market anyway.
How much more?
Well, I just feel like, whenever you look at the corn market, you could probably take out the highs. I don't know that you're going to march substantially higher, but, the thing is that every time we went up, the basis has kind of worked against us, so I'm not so sure basis of pay for storage. I want to get it out of a situation where I'm paying storage, so I'm going to pay that storage whether the market goes up, down, or sideways. But, I don't think that we're going to run to $4 by any means as far as your old crop goes, but I do think that we can see another 15, 20 cents out of this market.
Matt, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks, Don.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon, the 17th day of February. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Eric Snodgrass is now here with an update of the weather forecast. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us. Man, it's been warm.
Well, you know, Todd, it feels like another year where we just want to find the groundhog and arrest him for fraud. It has been incredibly warm across most of the United States, with the exception of kind of the Pacific Northwest. So what I thought we would do is start off with a short-term forecast and then get into the longer-term kind of bigger picture things. So let's start off out west. California has had a really, really rough last 2 weeks. Incredible precipitation over the last 50 days has finally reached kind of a pinnacle here, and we saw some outstanding footage of the Lake Oroville being filled to its brim, overspilling into its primary spillway and its emergency spillway, causing the evacuation of a lot of people in that downstream area. Well, thankfully that's backed off, but I want to start there because California is under the gun again this weekend and next week. We are looking at the Sierra Nevada mountains picking up another 60 to 90 inches of snow. And as far south as Southern California, like Los Angeles, they may be getting 4, 5, or 6 inches of rain from this next system that's coming on shore. We just have to keep an eye on California. remember, because it is a big player across ag markets because it leads the country in the production of over 40 separate fruits and vegetables. So got to keep an eye on what's going on out there. Now let's skip on back across the country, get over here to the Corn Belt. We are going to be seeing a big ridge due to some very weak polar flow coming across the United States over the next several days. This is going to send above freezing temperatures about 500 miles into Canada by Monday and Tuesday. That means for us around here, we're talking 60 degree temperatures across all of the Corn Belt for the most part, even in upper 50s as far north as Minnesota. Even the Dakotas, I'm expecting to see middle to upper 40s. And that's a big deal because we're going to start to see some of that big snowpack that's in North and South Dakota start to melt. And we know that's kind of an issue for the spring planting, as a lot of that snow could cause some prevent plant issues. Now, when we start to think about these warm-ups, one thing that I know a lot of guys are starting to do is get kind of itchy to get in the field, and so I went ahead and looked at some soil temperatures around the Midwest. I'll tell you, right here around Champaign-Urbana, we're still looking at upper 30s at 4-inch soil temperatures and around 40 degrees at 8 inches, but you're going to see those numbers really jump up this week with several days in the upper 50s and lower 60s, maybe even middle 60s. I actually think we might have a day there that approaches 70 in Champaign. So remember, though, it's still February, and March can bring some surprises with some big cold air outbreaks, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. But I want to give you an update on the drought. Now, we've been talking about my concern over the drought that's in Oklahoma and Arkansas. That drought has really done its best to try to hang around over the winter time period. Luckily, over the last few days, parts of Texas got between 1/2 inch and 2 inches of rain, and some of that spread across Oklahoma and Arkansas, which is good. We need that moisture to get into that area. And we're expecting to continue to stay kind of active over the next few weeks with keeping more moisture in there. Now, speaking of activity, we are watching a system, and I know it's a little bit far out here, but we're watching an interesting system that's going to be coming across around February 24th, which is a Friday, and February 25th, which is that Saturday. The model has been very consistent with the formation of a deep low-pressure system in the central United States. Now, what's the point behind me telling you this so early? Well, the first thing is it's going to bring more rain to the central states, which is good. We need pre-season moisture kind of piling up in the central part of the United States and in the Corn Belt. But the risk here is that every time one of these systems comes across in March, in late February, March, and April, it's going to be bringing a higher risk of having some severe storms, especially to the south. And we are way above average with respect to severe weather in the south. For example, we've already had 170 reports of tornadoes, whereas average is about 70 so far this year. And I am not seeing that volatility in the jet stream slowdown for March. There's actually quite a few indicators in the long-range forecast that March is going to continue to have an active jet stream, which means more active severe weather. And what I'm going to do kind of finish this up is I want to talk with you about El Nino and La Nina. Now, we are right now seeing the end of the very weak La Nina we had over winter. And that La Nina was not the driver of a lot of our weather systems. But what's going on right now is that off of the west coast of South America, we're already starting to see above average temperatures, which is indicative of El Nino conditions. In fact, most long-range models, each month that we update them, are starting to predict a stronger and stronger El Nino event building in by summer. Now, what's the big impact of that? Well, I'll tell you, I've looked at the correlation between July weather and El Nino and La Nina for most of the Midwest, and that correlation coefficient is zero. It's something I stressed in our weather video last week. And if it's zero, that means it's not a strong indicator that El Nino or La Nina will govern what's going on in our weather. So please remember that, as there's going to be a lot of talk about upcoming El Nino event. Who it will affect is if that El Nino hangs on into next winter, expect northern growing regions in Brazil to struggle with drought again like they did with last year's El Nino.
Thanks for the update, Eric. Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.